Hi, this is Carla King, host of the Misadventuring Podcast, an interview program that talks with people living a misadventurous lifestyle.
Hi, and this is D. Brent Miller, the audio guru and professional sidekick. That's the title that Carla has given me. And we're going to be talking about misadventures. Carla, what is a misadventurous lifestyle?
You know, Brent, that's a good question. It is a little bit of a made-up word, but for me, in this era of prepackaged adventures, misadventuring means striking out on my own, planning and living my own adventure, which brings a lot of uncertainty into life and travel, but it does force a kind of courage to trust my instincts and intuition, which I've come to know brings amazing rewards, especially when I'm traveling, but also in life in general. To me, I like to say misadventuring is less like a mistake and a little more like misbehaving. I know the word misadventuring may bring up something different for you. In fact, I'd like to hear your ideas. So here's an invitation for listeners. Email me your definition of misadventuring. I'll put the ones I like most on the website, and if I use it, you'll get a free copy of my book, American Borders. So be sure to include your snail mail address. My email address is on the misadventuring.com website.
Now, this sounds like a lot of fun. So we have a guest today. Who is this misadventurer that we're going to be talking to?
Today's guest hopped on a plane when she turned 18 years old. She worked her way around the world and finally settled down in the San Francisco Bay Area to make a living as a travel writer and dance workshop leader while she raised her son. But first, a word from our sponsors.
What? We got sponsors?
Well, Brent.
We got sponsors?
We're cultivating sponsors. Here, oh. I'll tell you what. If you're interested in underwriting the Misadventurous podcast, just click the Email Me button on the misadventuring.com website. We'll have our people call your people.
Okay, great. We'll have our people call your people. Alrighty then. Well, we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back with our guest on the line. All right, we're back, and now we have our guest on the line, and here's Carla.
Today my guest is Lisa Alpine, and we're going to explore her path to her very fabulously misadventuring lifestyle, which all started the day she turned 18, when she flew to Paris and spent the following years traveling, working her way around the world, waitressing in Switzerland. She picked olives in Greece, imported merchandise from South America, led whitewater rafting trips. That's just to name a few. These early experiences led her finally into a career as a freelance travel writer. In the last two decades, she's been busy publishing stories, traveling, acting as a book midwife, too, helping others to get their stories published, and also leading dance workshops. But you know what? That's not all. Lisa's also a member of the Wild Writing Women, which is a San Francisco Bay Area writing group that I also belong to. We publish our own books and webzines, hold literary salons, and basically twirl around the world together whenever we get a chance. In fact, Lisa and I have been spending many happy hours together in locations from Florence to Fiji, so we've had plenty of time to discuss our lives, lament what we've given up, and celebrate what we've gained in the quest to make our own ways in life. Lisa, welcome. I'm so happy you've agreed to share your secrets with our listeners today.
Oh, I'm happy to be talking about what's guided my life and yours and many of the other women I know.
Thanks. So I have a good first question for you here. You probably know that travel writing always hits the first or second position in any list of careers people want, and we all know that it's extremely tough to break in. So I wonder if you tell us, how did you win a place in this very highly coveted field?
By wanting to start putting into words and storyline all the experiences that I'd accumulated very young in my life in traveling around the world solo back in the early 70s, be it in the Amazon or the coast of Yugoslavia. I always traveled with minimal amount of money, if any. So I had to be very creative in getting places, talking to people, connecting. And that was my education in learning about the global world and also learning of other people's lives and how different they were from mine and learning their lessons through their stories. And then I wanted to start weaving that together into stories I could share with other people. I felt full, like there was this need to start to get out of me all the wonderful, inspirational pieces and experiences I had in my jaunting about the world. How many wonderful, good-hearted people there are in every country I went to. And so that's what really inspired me to start writing, was this feeling full and needing an outlet for the stories.
And I've also heard you talk about your decision to, quote-unquote, settle down as a travel writer, which is not a career move that people make when they want to settle down. They usually want to go jaunting all about. But so why did you settle down to be a travel writer?
Well, I had a baby. I had gotten married to somebody else who was as much of a travel nut as I was, and we got married, and we were in New Zealand for our honeymoon, and I got pregnant. Suddenly, there were going to be three of us in our lives together doing this adventurous work, save money, travel plan that we had. But the baby, having a baby made me realize that I did have to stay home at some point when he was small and provide some kind of stability and a roof and all that stuff. So I thought, well, what kind of work can I do that's home-based? And that's where I came up with the idea of, and also this urge to write down the stories. I saw it as an opportunity to actually stay home for at least a couple of months at a time, raising my son, Galen, and writing at the same time. Yeah, so it's all his fault that I'm a travel writer.
That's great. And Ben, not only did you settle down to be a travel writer, but you also became a dance workshop leader. And I know you pretty well, but I realized that I don't really know the story of how and when you merged this dance workshop leading, not just dancing, but leading the workshops into a business along with your writing business. When did that happen? And how did you start dancing, and how did you start knowing that you could become a leader in that?
Well, it was interesting because what happened was I had developed my writing career fairly quickly once I decided to do it. I had a series of very fortunate encounters with editors who really liked my writing style. And so I started getting published. Suddenly I was a professional writer, writing, traveling, getting published. And then, and all the time this was going on, my son was with me, so I did a lot of family piece, adventure pieces. And again, another thread in my life has been that I've always loved dance. My mother picked me up when I was an infant, and every night would dance with me. I remember that, even very small, 2 years old, I'd be on her hip. And so I grew up as that was a real wonderful connection and shared experience with my family, dancing. And I continued to do that even in my travels, you know, be it the local nightclub or dancing in the square in Cusco to the pan pipes late at night. It was a theme. Like, I heard there was dancing anywhere I was in. I was moving around. And so this love of dancing followed me into my mid-30s, and I wanted to get more experimental, and so I started renting dance studios and experimenting and developing my own style. And that led to people saying, oh, I would like to study with you, which was a real foreign thing to me. I was thinking, well, I'm really just doing this for me. Why would I want other people to be involved with it? But I succumbed to the request and found out that I did like guiding people into finding their own movement. I don't teach steps. And then my love of travel wove into that. It dovetailed into, well, we all love to dance. I love to dance. Let's do it in France or Mexico or Hawaii. So I would multitask and take my students to France. We'd have a dance workshop, and then I would write travel pieces on the places where we were staying and where we visit and all that. So it was really interesting combining the two careers and how they worked off of each other. It was really
Lisa, that's very unique, and I was astounded to see when I first met you that you teach writing and dance at the same time, and your website tells that you believe that the dancing kind of loosens the creative juices and you can get the story going. And so how is that teaching? Does anybody else do that, or is it just you?
You know, I'm not really familiar with other teachers and what they're up to, because I'm so involved with my own. What I teach reflects what I'm learning in my own life. So I'll be working on my own dance experience and developing new ways of movement and expressing myself and telling my own internal story. And suddenly I'll realize, oh, this is something that somebody else would like to know about. So I created a workshop even in the last 6 months called Story Dance. And that's where we write our story, we dance it, we write it, we dance it. And I do find, because dancing's a little more out there than writing, it's physical, you cannot hide yourself anywhere on a written page like you can as a writer. You know, you're not at home by yourself writing, you're actually out there with other people moving, you are the art form. And so what if you dance your story and write it and develop both sides of the brain? It's quite stimulating. And that, I'm doing it. This is all self-motivated. I'm doing it for my own reasons, that this intrigues me, that the mind has this very methodical way of writing. But where does the inspiration come from? And a lot of times I stir it up through my dancing, through connecting to that ecstatic place that gets stimulated with movement. And I found that many people like that form. Plus, who wants to sit in a chair for 8 hours and listen to somebody? So that's the other thing, is bring the movement in, move the body, keep it healthy, and then also work the mind. So it's this mind-body connection, and they support each other.
So that inspiration, I think the point I'd like to make here is that when you follow your own inspiration, you can create your own the dream life. When you're following mm-hmm. what you love, and you know that somebody else probably loves that too. And I know you're a natural teacher, and I appreciate that. At the Wild Writing Women conferences, you get up and say, "Okay, everybody, shake your writer's butt away."
And everybody stands up and shakes. It's sort of interesting.
They do, you know. They do exactly what you say. But along the same lines, what kind of role would you say that intuition plays in your life, especially in your life as creating a business mm-hmm. around your travel writing and your dancing and maybe financial endeavors? What role does intuition play in all of that?
Well, because I've chosen a path that hasn't necessarily been walked in exactly the same way as I'm walking it, I've had to allow myself to trust my internal voice, that little voice in the middle of the night that when I'll wake up and say, it'll say to me, how about a short story on this particular piece? And then I'll also see where it's supposed to be published. Or let's create a workshop that combines storytelling and dancing together, not just two separate workshops. Those inspirations usually come, and I trust them now. I've learned to trust them, that they guide me. It's almost like having a guide, a guiding voice, a guiding light. And that trust also helps me be a little more experimental and brave. Well, if that doesn't work, so what? Create something else. It's not like it's the be-all and end-all. And I think to listen to the intuition and to know the difference between intuition and just random thought is really, really crucial in knowing yourself as an artist mm-hmm. and what comes next in your life.
But not only an artist, as a business person, because you are an artist
yeah.
who's created a business. So I think you've done a wonderful job in combining the two and being financially successful and making this work for you and others.
Yeah, well, we can't, in our society, we cannot exist without money. I mean, maybe we can if I have friends that join monasteries and stuff so that they can just meditate or focus on their spiritual life or So it's feasible, but the reality is we need money. Money is freedom. Money allows us to do what we need to do in our lifetime, be it dance, write, motorcycle through China, travel. But as an artist, what I've discovered is it's how much money do you think you need? You know, can you be frugal? Can you focus on, instead of buying a new car, how about that money goes to renting a dance studio and developing your dance skill? So it's just prioritizing and then also seeing that, how do I say, there's like this balance between realizing money is really important, not feeling detached from it, and valuing it's what it provides, which is freedom. And at the same time, not feeling that we are successful because of the amount of money we make. We're successful because we're doing what we want with our life.
That is a very good point. And, you know, some people, I have a guest coming up who loves making money, and she's just a money magnet, and it's her art. So that's a little bit of a different thing. I know that you and I both feel like if we have enough, though we can go off and travel, that's just great. And combining our loves is just a dream come true. And you mentioned something about, you know, when you trust your internal voice and you get that inspiration and you've learned to be brave enough to listen to that. And that just brings up the concept of fear, which is a concept that we talk a lot about. And I just wanted to ask you, have you had any fears over your life? I'm sure you have, but how have you overcome them? How have you gotten to be brave and do and make the move into
That's
your intuition?
That's a really good question. Yeah. It's what helps me is that I know that the next day, if I'm having, if I'm going through a difficult period in finances or friendships, family, whatever health, though I'm really blessed with good health, so I'm very fortunate in that way, but whatever the issue is, that a new day will come. There is another, the next day is going to come, and there's a really good chance, like the weather patterns in the sky, that it won't be cloudy and rainy, that it will be sunny. And to hold on to that is really important for me when I'm going through it. Because I'm very emotional, and emotional people tend to, whatever's happening in the moment is what's happening. And we can't sometimes lift our head up and go, oh, this is happening, but tomorrow doesn't mean it's going to still be happening. It'll probably be something different. So to have a little more detached attitude to the experiences, even though it's hard not to grasp them, and it's that really fine dance between wanting to absorb life completely and really feel everything that's going on and then have it translated through your art form or whatever your creative process is, but also not letting it overwhelm and become the biggest reality there is. So fear is interesting in that regard. And, you know, it's hard not to feel afraid. Every step we take, there's danger. Every single step is like a dangerous proposition because things change, and change can bring any kind of experience. It's not predictable. And that's why I love to travel, by the way. And I love to travel in those wild places because you don't know what's around the next corner. And then the challenge is the growth. Like, how am I going to face that rapid that I was not expecting? Well, I better face it because I have no choice. How am I going to deal with it? That is such a strong, powerful teacher.
And that's something you learn, isn't it? That if you just, you learn to face your fear. Oh, my gosh, the rapid's coming. I have no choice, so you deal with it. And if you do that enough times in different areas of life, you come to respect that and feel a very pleasurable challenge of overcoming it and getting over the rapid and seeing that gorgeous landscape in front of you. And
yeah. How else do we develop skill unless we go through the learning curve and the difficult experiences? Really, when you think of people that I admire who are truly talented, they've worked to get there. And the work means facing those challenges and fears and learning from them and growing. And I'm really excited. And I've seen this in your writing a lot, Carla. You have gotten so good just by continuing to jump into the arena and battle with those words and develop the skill. And it's very inspiring, because that's my goal, is to be a really great writer and a really great dancer by the time I'm, whenever I decide to leave the planet. And, you know, that means I gotta do it. I gotta face the music, whether my knee hurts or not. I gotta write, even if the words don't want to come out.
Yeah, it is. People think that writing and dancing and painting, they're all very glamorous jobs, but when you're sitting there in front of the page or the canvas or the dance floor, you know, the famous writer's block feeling comes over. But the fear thing, I do always like to point out that, you know, people in everyday life, no matter how mundane you feel like your life is, overcome these incredible fears. Like, you know, you graduate from high school and you go to college and you move and you get a job and you get fired from your job or you quit your job or you get married or you get divorced and you have a baby. I mean, all these things are incredibly fearful inducing.
Yeah, they're stressful
moments. And you know, how do you juggle that? You know, how do you, well, you know, these are just moments that we take for granted. But with somebody like you who has all of those fear, you know, basic things going on, how do you juggle your creative writing with the business of being a writer and running your dance workshops and being a mother now to a, you know, fabulous, wonderful grown-up
25-year-old guy who's in New Zealand mountain climbing.
Yeah.
He just called me through Skype yesterday and left a message that he just traversed a glacier and done all this adventure. Yeah.
And he's followed in your footsteps.
Yeah, he seems to enjoy that wild lifestyle, that unknown lifestyle. But, yeah, how do I juggle it all and continue to wake up every morning with enthusiasm? I love everything I do. I do. I hate to say it, and it's really bizarre. I love paying my bills. Do you know why? Because it means that I can continue then into that freedom zone I'm talking about, where I can write and dance and not worry, am I going to survive? I like surviving. I like getting the basic covered and then doing the dancing, which means I don't waste a lot of time. I don't watch TV. I'm probably disciplined in somebody else's eyes, but in my eyes, I don't have a schedule. Like, I don't say I'm going to write from 8 to 9 and I'm going to da-da-da. And that's something I could easily tell your listeners. Find your own rhythm. What works for you? Do you do better with disciplined scheduling? Or somebody like me, I need free form. I need freedom and free form, but I also know that, and note and trust, I'm going to take care of the basics before I do the stuff that's more, more in the creative zone. So it's just that. For me, it's balancing my life and doing, when I think of something, I do it immediately, if possible, instead of thinking, I want to pay that bill tomorrow. It's like, pay it today. Or I want to write that story. I'll start writing that story next week. No, start it today, even if you only have time for one page, for the title page even. But it's like, as soon as something comes into the mind, do it. Don't put it on a list. Do it, if possible. You know, I know a lot of people's lives don't allow for that kind of immediate response. But that really makes a difference, because I really, truly don't want to waste energy on thinking about what I should be doing. I'd rather just do it, get it over with, and then move on to the stuff that really counts in my life.
That's a great tip.
Mm-hmm. It saved me so much time in my clipboard. I keep a clipboard list every day of what I'm supposed to do. It's gone down from 3 pages to 1. Like,
wow.
If I'm going to write down email so-and-so about deadline, I don't write it on my clipboard anymore. I just go to the computer and email them immediately.
Fantastic. I'm going to try to take that advice.
It takes the same amount of time. And then I don't have to think, God, I've got to go email that person.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, we're going to put that in our list of tips for you. at the end of the program, even if you haven't included
it
yourself.
It.
Yeah. The other thing is support systems. So when you're an artist or writer, dancer, sometimes it's hard to find people around you who live the same kind of life and who can sympathize, because it's hard for somebody who's, you know, living a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah,
they
don't
like to say,
planet,
oh, poor
you,
you know.
Yeah,
who are your support systems? Who do you talk to? Do you have a tribe and people and family that you
understand? Well, right off the bat, I got to give my mom a big truckload of gratitude, because she never criticized me. All you moms-to-be, listen to this. Don't criticize your child. You know, I never got criticized. So I didn't ever think, when I thought of, oh, I'm going to go build a treehouse out of sheets and flowers and ribbons out in the backyard, I never got a comment of, oh, you shouldn't do that, you'll fall out of the tree, or don't use the sheets for that. Or so there was not a block to my creative impulse when I was a small child, and I do think that has a lot to do with, and why I'm a teacher. So much of what I teach is helping people get over all those negative voices that they heard from childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had a young woman yesterday come over to my house asking me to write a letter for her graduate degree. She's a painter, and she's applying to a graduate school. And she wanted me to write a letter of recommendation for her. And I asked who else was writing, and I said, oh, what about your family? And she said, no, my dad, he thinks I shouldn't be an artist. He doesn't think I'll be able to support myself.
Oh,
and I'm, like, looking at her, and she's a fabulous painter. And I'm just shaking my head going, you have got to do what you want to do with your lifetime. It's too short. You're too good at what you do. Don't listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Don't listen to the negative voices. That's a big part of the support system. Support is support. So you want to be around people who say, you know, Carla, what a great idea for a book. Oh, you're going to motorcycle across China, Mongolia? You are so amazing. Not like, why would you want to do that? How are you going to make any money? Oh, aren't you worried that some Mongolian's going to race out on his horse and nab you and kidnap you? No, like, you wouldn't do it if you listened to those people. So it's so crucial to have people that say yes and get excited, and which means usually, I'll tell you the truth, they're people that are doing what they want with their life. So surround yourself with people who care about you, people who are artists, or business people, people who are enthusiastic about what they're doing with their life. And then it'll be easy for them to support you. They won't feel jealous. It won't be a reminder to them that they're not doing what they want with their life. That's pretty much my milieu, is other people in the writing and dance field, because they understand the importance of following the inspiration, the dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not a hobby. It's not a whim.
Mm-hmm.
It's a passion. It's a life-driving force. I read something about joy the other day, and the biggest key ingredient to joy is following your purpose in life, knowing what it is and following it. Yeah, it doesn't have to make sense to anybody else, but it's important for us to know why we're here and what we're doing with our time here.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you mentioned all kinds of things like relationships and passion and all that. So this is the time where I get to ask you, how's your love life? How's this adventurous woman's love life over the years and now? Any good juicy tips for aspiring, misadventuring people?
Well, first one would be roll it back to that support issue.
Yeah.
You know, find a partner who digs that, well, I mean, for me, I've got to find, obviously I want to be with somebody who thinks that dancing and writing are totally the bomb and they love what I do and they support me in it. And then if I say, oh, I'm teaching a dance workshop in France, their response would be, oh, fantastic, instead of like, oh, God, don't leave me. So I had an interesting life relationship-wise. A lot of times my own interests and my travels have been more important to me than being involved with somebody else. So that's given me a lot more sort of freedom to be in relationship or not. not be so driven by that. And I've also been really fortunate. I'm in a really interesting relationship now with a man who's a publisher, a progressive political press publishing house. And he's the publisher, so he totally gets what I'm doing and how important work is and doing what you love with your life. And it's wonderful. And you know how we spend our sometime. He was just here in Hawaii for 10 days. And we'd wake up every morning and work together. I mean, he'd be working on his stuff and I'd be working on mine. And it was great to be with somebody who understood that it's a desire to work, not a have to do it type of thing.
It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Yeah.
But that hasn't always been true in your relationships. Then it's hard to break.
Oh yeah.
Away. Even so.
Yeah, so true. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and that's why I'm not the classic married with three or four kids. You know, stay at home mom. Mm-hmm. First off, I didn't want to stay home, and second off, you know, if somebody's not enhancing my life, I really don't want to spend time with them. You know, if they're jealous of me and my career or possessive or, it's made for an interesting lifestyle. I wouldn't recommend it for everybody because for some people it would be very unstable not to be in one ongoing relationship. Just like I mentioned before about finding your own rhythm and your work and how you spend your time and what works for you, the formatting, it's also really important to know ourselves emotionally what works. And I know what works for me and always has is to have very passionate, loving, supportive relationships, but it's not going to follow the classic norm of what society has told me I should want. And I'm so glad that I've had a child. I must say that has really enhanced my life. But, you know, if you talk to my son, he was in Morocco when he was 8 months old. He was he's not had a traditional lifestyle either. He went to a Waldorf school. And so my need for a free life has influenced how I raised my child also. And luckily, he's compatible with it. I think some kids would be going, God, give me suburbia. Why does my mom have to dance around like that and teach people, other people how to do it? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, we're going to be out of time soon, so I want to finish up with a couple more things. First mm-hmm. of all, thanks for that. And where can we read your travel writing, and how can we find out about your dance workshops? What are you doing next? What are you doing now?
I am in the process. It's actually taken me a few months to create enough space and time in my life in financial stability to do this, but I'm working on a book about my dance, what I teach in my dance workshop, how dance is a healing art form. So that's something that's been going on for a while, but I've cleared the deck recently to really get serious about that again. And then I'm also doing a collection of short stories, and about two or three of those pop out every month, and I'm building up enough for a book that I'd like to self-publish, and that's been really delightful. I love that form, the short story form. And then I do a travel column for the Pacific Sun on and off. And what else am I doing?
And that's in Marin.
Marin County, California. I've been their travel writer for 2 decades, I think.
You've been their travel writer for 2 decades, right?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
So for finding out about my dance workshops, I do have a website, and it's danceweaver.com.
Yes, and we'll have that on our show notes, and
so
people can go to MissAdventuring.com, and we'll get you links.
Yeah, and then the writing
workshops
are Lisa Alpine.
LisaAlpine.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking on your Dance Weaver website right now. It looks like you've got a lot of exotic locations planned for this year, if somebody wants to
bring
you in.
Yeah, Mexico. I'm going to be going to Mexico, and I'm thinking about Argentina, but we'll see. As I said, I've really been clearing my time and finances to have to finish these books.
That's I'm glad to hear it. We've been waiting for them.
I know, and that's where the support comes from, my writers group, yes.
Right. The Wild Writing Women is a very good support group, huh?
Oh, I can't tell you how much I look forward to our meetings. Through all the ups and downs and the, how long have we been in the writers group, the Wild Writing Women, 12, 15 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so another, that's another support system that's so important is having a writers group that's ongoing. Yeah,
right, that's committed.
Very, very crucial.
So now it's time for you to give us your three quick tips for the website collection of tips for people who are also dreaming of breaking out of the box and creating a fabulously misadventurous lifestyle themselves. You've already mentioned a couple. How many more do you have?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I could write a book.
You can.
Well, trust your instincts and your intuition. The inspirational thought that says, I am not going to wait another year before I go to Egypt. I'm going to go this year. There it is. And then instead of think about it, do it. So as soon as you think about it, you say, I'm going to research what time in time frame within this year works for me. And then I'm going to research airfare. So you start the process of it becoming concrete reality. Trust your instincts, listen to your intuition, and then act on it. And then, well, another interesting piece is unplug. Unplug from the things like the media, maybe news, whatever it is that makes you think, oh, I shouldn't do that, I shouldn't go there, I'm a woman, I shouldn't travel alone. All the things that generate fear. You know, the parent, don't listen, you know, maybe just tell the parent who says, what do you want to do that for? And you say, excuse me, what I need to hear from you is, great idea, can I take care of your dog while you're gone? So unplug from the fear and the negative voices in society and in your own personal life and in our own heads, and consider going alone, having these adventures alone, even if it's just a day trip to the museum in San Francisco or a day-long bike ride by yourself to some area you haven't been before. Have adventures by yourself to get to know yourself in situations without always having the backdrop of another person that you already know. Make it so you don't know. Create the unknown zone, I call it. You don't know what's around the corner, but if you're walking along with somebody you already know and you're in a relationship with, that creates a real sense of existing reality. And what if you wanted to just completely go in fresh on your own and learn from these experiences? So think about traveling and being and having experiences on one's by oneself occasionally, just to know what it's like, who you are in those circumstances.
That's great, and that'll give you a lot of room to create inspiration in yourself and follow your intuition, and finally, I think, discover what you can do to live your dream of a misadventurous lifestyle, as I call it.
Yeah, and build trust in yourself.
Build trust, definitely. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for that advice, and thanks for sharing the path of Lisa Alpine with us today. You always inspire me, and I know you've inspired many people today, our listeners. And you can find out more about Lisa Alpine on the misadventuring.com website. Lisa Alpine's a writer, book midwife, dance workshop leader, daughter, mother, and inspiration to us all. You'll find links to Lisa's website again at misadventures.com. MissAdventureRing.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the program or want to send me your definition of misadventuring, just click the email button on the website. I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again, Lisa.
Thanks, Carla.
Okay, Brent, what's next on the program?
Carla, we're going to be inviting people in to, or inviting people to email us with questions about misadventuring lifestyle. And so we're hoping to have some email to answer in the near future. But I was talking with a bunch of guys the other day, and they were asking me, what is a good motorcycle to travel around the world on?
Funny you should ask. You know, I get that question a lot, and it's a tough choice because, well, okay, if you're going to travel around the whole wide world, your options are a little bit narrower. You know, you're probably going to run into some bridges down, so you're going to have to traverse rivers, and you also want to get on those freeways in Italy. Those are a treat not to be missed, for sure. So I've had a lot of discussion on my website about this, and of course the BMW GS series comes up first and foremost. Now, I kind of object against that. It's a fantastic bike, but it's a big bike. Even a fairly good-sized man has a hard time handling it, especially when it's packed up with gear for traveling around the world. As you can imagine, you have a ton of stuff. So I do, yeah, I mean, for hot weather, for cold weather. You've also, don't forget, you've got all your tools and probably a couple of spare tires and things like that, you know, headlights, because it's hard when you're in the middle of Madagascar to find a official BMW parts dealer, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there's been plenty of books published about people who are traveling around the world on motorcycles, and people have done it on Goldwings, they've done it on Harley Davidsons, Ted Simon has done it on a Triumph. Lots of different types of bikes, but I say the best motorcycle is the one that's in your garage.
That's a fantastic idea. Yeah,
that's the best one.
I think you're right, and I know that you're having a little flirtation with a V-Strom, which is another
just
popular,
a little one. Yeah,
just a little V-Strom. Yeah. Is it the 650?
Yeah. I've done my research, and I think that's probably the one that I'm going to is going to be the next bike. Yeah,
the next bike in your garage, and I'm thinking about maybe a KLR, the Kawasaki KLR, because I really want to go down to Mexico, and that's been a proven round the world motorcycle as well. But you know, I know you're reading Lois on the Loose, and Lois had, I think, a 250 Yamaha that she took from Alaska down to South America. So, you know, wherever I go, I think I'm Little Miss Adventuring Tough Girl, and I see somebody doing the same trip on a three-speed bicycle with flip-flops, you know? You just can't win.
Again, it comes down to the best bike to take is the one that's in your garage.
I totally agree with that, Brett.
Okay, so we'll be looking for some emails from listeners asking questions about a misadventurous lifestyle. Carla, what's coming up in the next programs?
Well, next time we're going to meet Rita Golden Gelman. Rita is a children's book author who lives on $10,000 a year in some of the most exotic places in the world. And she wrote a book called The Female Nomad, describing her life, and she's going to share some tips with us next time.
Sounds fascinating.
Great. Until next time, then, this is Carla King wishing that all your misadventures have happy endings.